Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
I'm Sheila Shoiga, and welcome to Ready to Be Real Conversations, the podcast series where I chat to people of all walks of life. Some names you'll recognise, others you might not, but my hope is that these conversations will at times inspire, challenge, educate, comfort, or simply entertain you. This week, I speak to businesswoman and mother, Denise Phillips.
I always say, like, when people, I would get a lot of messages saying, like, my sister's pregnant and I'm on my road, like, I've had 6 fails. How did you deal with that? Someone else's happiness is not going to take away or add to your sadness.
Yes.
So by somebody having a happy life or a successful life, it's not going to impact you from having a happy life or a successful life. And when you're doing a fertility journey, that is so important to know.
Denise lives in Newbridge, County Kildare, with her husband Mark, their 6-year-old daughter Beth, and she's also stepmother to 16-year-old Ellie. Hugely successful in her career as the owner of Pello Hairdressing and co-owner of Irish hair brand Voodoo, last week she got the surprise of her life when she found out she was over 6 months pregnant. For the past 10 years, she's lived with unexplained infertility. No periods, no ovulation, and the lining of her womb was very thin. On their 9th cycle of IVF, she went on to have their little girl. And when Beth was only a baby, she took part in TV documentary The Baby Makers, which followed the lives of couples for over a year who were trying to conceive and showed the reality of IVF. This was one of my favourite chats ever on the podcast. It's full of wisdom and practical advice, especially for those who are navigating the often challenging road to parenthood. She speaks about acceptance and gratitude and the importance of staying in your own lane. And when we spoke on Tuesday, she had just come from all her pregnancy appointments in the Coombe Hospital, where she found out she was almost 29 weeks pregnant. Here it is. So Denise, huge congratulations.
Thank you so much.
Baby number 2 on the way. I mean, yeah.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
It's literally, I think yesterday it was the first day that I went, holy moly, you're actually pregnant.
Yeah. Is it just starting to seep in?
Yeah, I suppose seep in. It was probably such a high the first few days, obviously telling friends and family. But now after coming from the Coombe, when I've actually got to see my baby properly, feel the relief of getting told that, you know, all of the organs and limbs and spine is good and the head size is good and that I've carried a healthy baby, or it's carried itself.
Yeah.
That was just, I was like, you couldn't even, I just felt like I won the lotto.
Yeah.
Literally.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
It is the stuff of miracles.
I when I heard you last week on Instagram, and I think like all of your followers and all the new followers you gained as well were just in awe of this amazing story.
And it is amazing. And it just goes to show that this story can happen to absolutely anybody at any time.
Yeah.
And I'm always a firm believer in belief, like in achieving and believing. And I always say, always through all of my rounds of IVF, people said, you know, did you ever get disheartened? I actually believed on every single cycle that I was pregnant. I used to stand in my hall and say, you are pregnant. Your body's, you know, receiving this baby. And I'd obviously get a fail. So I believed on each even cycle that I'd done that I was pregnant. I really believed in myself, my doctors. I believed that even when I had the fail on television, I believed I was pregnant. I really believe in belief.
Yeah.
And then sometimes it just, you know, something might come up and it might, like, mightn't be meant to be. Mm. But I think then that brings you to the next step. Like, yeah.
Yeah, because I think for people listening, you are massively inspiring. Because especially if you have been through, whether it's IVF or something else, and you've had disappointment, it's sometimes hard to keep the faith and keep positive and keep believing. But you had that each and every time.
Yeah.
You never lost it.
And I always say to people, like, if you have your vision and if you're tired and you can't see yourself getting that vision anymore, you can reassess. Your journey can change. Mm. It's okay to be like, right, you know, my main vision was always to become a mother. It was never to be married or it was to be a mother. That was what I wanted. I didn't dream of the white dress, the church, the wedding, that kind of stuff. I dreamed of being a mother. So I didn't really mind. I knew there were so many other options that when or if I was tired or my body was tired or my marriage was tired at a certain point, that I could reassess. And we had looked into adoption. We had got to the second round of that, fostering. Like, I knew there was other, that I didn't have to have a physical Beth to be a mother. I knew there was always going to be. So that's probably where my faith and belief stood in. I know there's lots of different ways to get your vision and goal, if that makes sense.
Yeah. So before we get into your, I suppose, going back to your mid-20s and discovering that perhaps you were going to have a challenging road ahead, I really want to just talk about the now, because you've just come from the coom. So this has been like, you've been up crack of dawn.
Yeah.
You've come straight from the coom. You're here. And I'm so grateful to you for making the time to have this conversation, because I'm sure you could probably do with a nap at this stage.
I'm so grateful to be given this opportunity to share my story.
Oh, it's brilliant. So you came from the big scan and all of the appointments kind of in one, because obviously you only found out last week that you're pregnant.
Yeah.
And you thought you were about 26 weeks pregnant last week, but you found out from the scan of the coom that you're actually
29 weeks tomorrow.
Yeah. So 29 weeks already, like, you're in the home stretch.
I know. I may start milking it.
You have to.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I really am going to.
Do you feel a bit robbed?
I did actually last week. I was crying for loads of different emotions because I loved being pregnant. Mm. I was never sick. I didn't have any soreness. I worked until 3 days before I had Beth. I loved everything. So I was like, I'm after getting 26 weeks or whatever taken away. Oh my God, I can't. But now I just feel so blessed that my baby's healthy, that I couldn't care if it was tomorrow. Yeah, and I didn't have anything in my home ready, you know.
Yeah. All is good. Baby's growing well. Yeah. And you were telling me as we were making our way to the studio that, you know, you don't drink, you don't smoke. So in a way, you know, you were already doing a lot of the right things without even realizing it.
Absolutely.
Which is a great sense of comfort, because not everybody necessarily would have that, you know?
Yeah. I think that babies are so strong, though. I think they'll survive. Like, they're just incredible. I think that we hear stories all the time of, like, these little embryos and babies just fighting through the odds and just really making us go, wow, you know, you've defeated the odds time and time again. Mm. Just think human life, even in general, is just amazing.
Mm. So for people who are listening, who are not aware of what you've been through, let's bring us back to your mid-20s, I suppose, when you had come off the pill and realised that no period is returning.
So I was on like every single pill. They couldn't seem to regulate or get one to suit me. And I don't think maybe the pill was a new thing back then. I'm not too sure at that stage. I'm 36 now, so you're talking when I was 17, maybe 18, 19, that age. But they took me off the pill completely and said, look, we'll, you know, take a break. And my period never returned. I spent the next kind of 3 years like in Portlaoise Hospital at gynecologists, like getting bone density checks. Like they checked every avenue, thyroid, everything. Like there wasn't a test that I didn't get done. I was in the Well Woman's Clinic for a good year. Clomid wouldn't even bring on a bleed for me. So that was kind of, yeah, the next 3 years. And I suppose I was a little, I was in my 20s, so it wasn't that important as such. But coming to the end of the 3 years, we set a date, me and Mark, to get married. And literally 2 days after I came back from our honeymoon, we went to the Sims Clinic for our first consultation.
Okay, so on the honeymoon, there was a lot of talk about what we're going to do next.
Yeah, I think it was kind of like, it was obviously the next step, you know. We want to be married and then maybe, you know, start our fertility road. But we knew, we'd looked into it and we had been told, like, you know, it's going to be IVF. I mean, I tried the Well Woman's Clinic, which is the step before you would go down IUI or IVF. And she'd done everything and she'd went through every avenue. And she was like, I think, you know, the next step is going to be a clinic. You just need to kind of choose a clinic now and, you know, get a consultation. And we went to an open day for the Sims. We went to a few open days before our wedding and honeymoon. And then we had this organised for when we came back. They were the most advanced clinic by far at that stage. And, you know, it wasn't very convenient. There was other hospitals near us in Newbridge. But I just felt the doctor, I clicked with her, the machinery they had, the tests they had were very advanced for IVF. You've got to remember IVF's only 20, maybe 30 years old, like, so it's still quite new, and they were the most advanced, definitely.
Yeah. So at this stage, you're in your late 20s, so about 10 years ago, or is it more?
Yeah, no, about 10 years ago, yeah, about 9, 10 years ago, yeah, sure, about 6, 7, yeah, about 10 years ago.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you're straight into it right after getting married.
Absolutely straight into it. And when I think back now, I'm like, oh my God, my whole married life was fertility. IUI, fail. IUI, fail. IVF, acupuncture, timed injections. Oh, like our calendar wasn't full of occasions with our friends. Our calendar was literally injection times, scan times. I had to be scanned every 2 to 3 days because my eggs would not grow without drugs. They needed to give me a lot of drugs. But with a lot of drugs, like you're going left, if you give too much, your eggs will get too big and that's your cycle gone. So I was up there every 2 to 3 days. I'd leave Newbridge at 7 o'clock in the morning, drive up, get my scan, go into, I worked in Peter Mark's time, and then go into work for the day. I was working two jobs. Mark was working two jobs. I was teaching in Clane College. I actually designed a course at night to teach over there to try and make sure, because it's at the time, I think it was about €150 per scan in the Sims, and you're talking every 2 and 3 days. I used to dread, I'd be sitting there going, please don't ask me to come up in 2 days, another €150. Yeah, yeah. Like, but yeah, so married life, when I look back now, wasn't a pretty sight for either of us, because if Mark crossed the road sideways, I would be on top of him. If I don't think I ate Chinese like for 2 years or something, like spicy foods, and oh, like
you became, you know, obsessed, I suppose.
Obsessed. If anybody asked me to do anything, I would have been like, how dare they? Yeah. Do they not understand what I'm going through? Your whole family is affected by your journey. Mm. And I even say that with any illness or any journey that anybody goes on, it's not just you that's been affected. I think back, my younger sister got pregnant, and I remember her saying to me one day, I couldn't enjoy my pregnancy around you because I'm not a jealous person. I wouldn't be like that. And I celebrated everyone's christening and stuff like that because no one knew I was on my fertility journey. I was still young. Like, you know, I didn't tell anyone I was doing IVF.
Oh, no.
It was far in. It was like when I became pregnant on Beth that I told.
Go away. How did you keep quiet?
Oh, you're so... Listen, you're so ashamed. Well, I, speaking from my point of view, you're so ashamed of the fact that you are paying to have something that's so, so natural to others, and that you've grown up watching the women around you give birth and have, you know, beautiful babies and pregnancies. You're paying for your child. I mean, it feels like you're buying something, and that doesn't sit right for me. This is just from my head space when I was so young. You go shopping for food and clothes and pay for that, or you pay for your nails and your hair to be done. Paying to have a baby is quite difficult to digest as a woman. Your friends are out buying their shoes and handbags and you're saving your money for an IVF clinic. That's hard. Like, that's tough on any woman, and you don't realise the significance of the strain that has on you as a woman while it's happening.
I wonder, is it spoken about enough, the psychological impact of, be it IUI, IVF or whatever fertility treatment a person is going through, what it can take out of you, but particularly, you know, going through rounds and rounds and rounds of treatment.
Do you know what, Sheila? I think any fertility journey is tough.
Yeah.
Because the woman's fighting for that baby. So even before IUI or IVF, with IVF and IUI, your body is completely shut down in a menopausal state and rebooted with drugs so they can control what's happening.
Mm-hmm.
So that's physical and emotional.
Yeah.
Like, I was inserting a gel up my vagina till I was 3 months pregnant on Beth.
Yeah.
Twice a day. I remember being at Ed Sheeran's concert and having to show the security guards my injections going in because I had to take them timed injections. You have a 15-minute window. If you miss your window for your injection, your whole cycle could be gone.
God, yeah.
So it's quite intense. And again, if you and your partner are doing IVF, it's still up to you. I mean, if it's a man that's doing it, they have to give their sperm and the sperm sits there. Mm-hmm. And then it's the woman fighting, you know. And you become kind of envious because they're your only person that you've probably told. For a lot of women that I know, they've literally told nobody, only their partner. And their life isn't changing.
Yeah.
But yours is. It's like even when you're pregnant and they're going out about and you're like, bye, you know, same sort of thing, but obviously much more extreme.
And again, it has to be said what a strong couple you guys are, because unfortunately, and I'm sure you're probably the same as me, I know a lot of people who haven't survived fertility treatments, who have just went, we can't do this anymore, and have separated as a result. And it's heartbreaking.
100%. But I remember turning around to my husband and saying to him after I had Beth, I don't care if you leave. I have my child. So I don't know if it's your hurt and you're trying to even hurt them back because you're so hurt at your journey, or I don't know. You become distant. You've got to remember, right?
Yeah.
That when you have sex, like when I have sex with my husband, I have sex to enjoy us, to love him, for our closeness. You know that when your sex life is good, your relationship is good. When you're having sex every week, your husband's in flying form, and you know, and in turn, the house is clean and all these kind of little things, right?
Yeah.
When you're doing IVF, if Mark asked me for sex, like, I mean, first of all, I'm injecting stuff into me, up me, around me. I'm getting prodded every 2 days for practically 2 years back to back because I had no cycle. I was able to go back into my cycle straight away.
Okay,
yeah.
Wow.
So for him to ask or want sex would, you know, there was very little of us. So the intimacy part starts to dwindle. And yeah. then with that, the communication does too.
Mm.
So it all has, you know, a very relevant point. And I can see why so many couples would split up. Like, definitely. From both sides. Yeah.
Yeah. It is. It's you know, you've touched on so many big things here. And again, like I do often when I'm chatting to somebody, I'm picturing the person listening and perhaps what their own experience is and what drew them to maybe listen to this conversation. And there'll be so many people who will want to hear from you because you are so inspiring and you have been through such a tough journey yourself. You really haven't had it easy by any stretch of the imagination. And it's also your attitude with it that is so real, but also so positive, that I think is giving a lot of hope to people. But I just think the whole area of fertility, the financial pressure, the emotional pressure, the pressure puts on your relationship, mentally, physically, it's just so huge. And I still feel like there's a lot that needs to be uncovered about it, and that people and women and couples are empowered before they go into it.
Oh, because there's no funding. I think it was, I remember when I was, I don't know if the statistics have changed, but Ireland and Lithuania were the only two countries in the EU that didn't diagnose infertility as a disease by the health organisation, which is soul defeating for women to be infertile or struggling with fertility, and for someone to say to you, you can't have any help financially or emotionally, no counselling. No, I went to counselling with Mark.
Yeah.
But we did pay for that as well.
Yeah, yourselves.
So there's very little, and like the government are fighting and we have TDs fighting for years and years. But at the end of the day, I mean, like, to say to somebody that their fertility journey isn't significant enough to get help from your government is mad.
Yeah, it is mad.
Mad. I know so many women that have said, you know, I just can't afford this. And I get that. I do get that. And, you know, I can't put my relationship through this again. And I totally get all of them points. But this still doesn't leave the woman. My mum always says, you have your number. Like, you have your number. So if your number is 2 and you can't have that number, it still tails you.
Mm.
Like, it's still, you know, it's still there on you. Like.
And that was your number, wasn't it?
2 is my number, yeah. I used to be like, mom, if you say that one more time to me, I'm actually going to go mental. It's not as easy as that for me. And she'd be like, no, Denise, you know. I think, you see, as well, our parents probably aren't as educated. And that's really important. And it's hard for people to get educated because it's such a lonely road that people don't want to scream and shout about it.
Yeah,
it's so personal. It's so strenuous. That when the woman's going through it, she doesn't want to shout out, hey, I'm infertile. Me and my husband are going through IVF. It's not something that while you're on that journey that you're completely proud of.
Yeah. Saying the word infertile, I know that's what you were told.
Yeah. Like my doctor said to me, Denise, of all my patients that I've ever seen, if somebody said to me, could you put one of your patients forward that would be the most unlikely to get pregnant naturally, she said, I'd put you forward.
Yeah. Like, I'm sorry for laughing. But
she was laughing in the scan. She couldn't believe it. This is a doctor, like, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
She couldn't believe it, like.
Yeah.
I mean, I had no lining in my womb.
Right.
And no eggs would grow without drugs. So if you scanned me on the 1st of December or scanned me on the 15th of December or scanned me on the 20th, my womb would look identical at all times.
Right. So when you say no lining in your womb,
it would measure 0.1.
And normally you're meant to have a certain...
I think it's like, I can't remember now, but it's like 6 or 7 to actually for implantation.
Yeah.
It could even be 9. I can't really remember the numbers, but it has to be a certain thickness for the embryo to be implanted. So not only did they have to grow my eggs, but then they had to work on my lining to make sure that implantation would be okay.
Okay. And again, it's supplementation, drugs.
Drugs, yeah.
And you found that out in your 20s, late 20s.
Yeah.
Tough. to handle that. How do you feel about the word? I mean, obviously, now, it's kind of like, I see you're infertile and I raise you 29 weeks pregnant. Thank you very much. But like, you know, it's such a harsh word. And I've spoken to experts who don't necessarily now like it as much. They say subfertile rather than infertile.
Well, look, there's probably no one that's infertile for deafness.
And you've proven that.
Yeah. I was okay with the word. I accepted my infertility.
Okay.
Now, when I say accepted it, that was, I really accepted it, like in the last 2 years. I was okay with it. I believed it made me the person that I am today. So I was actually quite proud of it. I was quite proud that I actually got to wear that t-shirt and represent it.
Okay.
I talked about this like kind of last week to my friends. The last year, maybe year and a half, I really found myself again, because I think that I was, when I was going through infertility, I became the new Denise. I became the really lonely. Mm-hmm. I became the very hard. I'm fine. I became not a bit fun. I became a new version of myself that was enwrapped in my journey. And so I believe this happens to people in any journey, like if it's grief or weight loss or whatever their journey is. Mm. I was now not Denise. My personality had flipped. I spent hours reading books on, you know, fertility. That's the conversation I'd have with my husband. I watch programs on it. I love educating myself. So I educated myself as much as possible in a field that I knew nothing about. Mm. I became very, and on the outside, I was very successful. I had a salon that was really successful. I had nice holidays, nice clothes. So to the outside world, it looked like I had it. But inside, I was hurting. And even after I had Beth, because I'd been that person for so long, I was still that person. Like, I didn't have Beth and go, oh, I'm back to myself now.
Okay.
Let's go to like 700 concerts. I became the person that was like, I was still lonely. I was still into myself. I couldn't see that I was separate to what my journey was, so that my fertility wasn't me.
Mm.
I was the infertility, whereas that was only a tiny part of me. I still should have been able to be Denise on a journey, but I wasn't. It wasn't until literally Beth was about four that I started, listening to podcasts and reading a lot. Now, I was always positive. I always, like I said to you, I always believed in myself, believed in my journey. I opened my salon when Beth was 9 months old, all that kind of stuff. But inside, I'm talking deep inside of me, I wasn't completely content.
Yeah. And I get that listening to you. And I think anyone listening would understand that too, because you're so single focused on this one thing that finally manifests on the 9th attempt, was it?
Yeah.
And you have your baby girl, but you're probably still in a state of, in a way, trauma, because it's been such a difficult few years for you. And especially with the fact that you kept it to yourselves for so long, that your body got very used to that. Your mind got very used to that environment. So it was difficult probably to break away from it.
Yeah.
It's incredible to hear you speak about acceptance, because I'm a big believer that, and I know listening to you speak and the books that you read, the work that you do on yourself, that a big step towards making any sort of change in life is to accept where you're at. Isn't it interesting that you speak about getting to a point of acceptance, that this is perhaps, you know, my path, this is the way it is. And yet, whatever, 2 years down the line, you find yourself pregnant.
Absolutely.
That you brought about some sort of shift and change within you by accepting where you're at that particular moment in time. And the power of being grateful and being positive and all the things that you now really do lean into each and every day.
Yeah. I think I was kind of like, although I was so grateful and I used to wake up every morning and say, thank you for Beth. Thank you, like, so, so much. I wasn't fully grateful. I was kind of like, yeah, you worked for that. You know, you earned that.
Which is true.
I know.
Which is true,
but
yeah.
Gratitude is much bigger than that.
Yeah.
You know, I remember becoming aware of how I reacted in situations. I don't know if I was listening to a Pat Tivoli podcast or something. I was in Wexford in the forest and I was walking through and he's like five steps. And
yeah.
I'd seen something online and I was like, oh my God, that's so inspiring. And it was basically, you know, there's no fight if you haven't got a reaction. So nobody can have a fight with you or an argument with you if you aren't arguing back.
Mm-hmm.
A fight takes two people or an argument takes two people. It's 50-50. You are responsible for 50% of your relationship. So when I'd be like, you know, say Mark, oh, he's doing this and he's doing that. And I'm like, why did that bother you so much, Denise? Like, why did it bother you that he left the toilet seat up? To a state that you actually caused an argument. Why did... So when I started becoming aware of the tiny little things that I was doing, like, what do you mean? You didn't load the dishwasher, but you were in a rush. Why didn't you? And then there was, I'm stressed, and then he's stressed, and then there's a fight over a dishwasher. Like, what the hell, Denise? Like, there was, just put the dish in the dishwasher, like. But then I became aware of all these little things, then the big things I was able to start becoming aware of. So the big things that I reacted to. And it was literally from, like, reading and... Because before that, like I said, I was positive, but I still wasn't giving out to the universe what I was expecting back. You know, I was still... Like, why is that person in a mood with you? Maybe they're going through IVF. Maybe they're in an abusive relationship. Maybe it's not you. So I have a huge staff. I have like 26 girls working. So, and I think we're 5 years. So even my growth through being a boss, like stepping back and going, you know, this is, I'm not Pello. Pello's my son. I'm not Pello. I'm Denise. Pello's Pello. So if somebody's giving out about Pello, it's not personal to me. They're giving out about the hours. Let's sort it out from work. Stop taking things personally, Denise. You know, they're not going, I can't, you know, there's too many clients booked in with me or something. And I'm going, oh, will you ever just come on? Like, let's move on. Like, blah, blah, blah. Instead of going, oh, she actually isn't working well like that. And this is a job. It's a job. It's not her life. It's a job. It's a tiny part. Let's try and make it work. And when I became like that, my business just boomed.
Mm-hmm.
All my girls were so happy in work. And I just started filtering that into other parts of my life. And then obviously, like the last year through lockdown, just completely was on its flip side with me.
Yeah, yeah.
Definitely.
I'm listening to you here with a big smile on my face because you've hit on so many big things for people. You know, I think, you know, self-care has become so important, particularly over the past year and a bit with COVID and how it has impacted people, and people realise now, God, we have to look after ourselves and what can I do to help myself feel better in my life. But when you speak about that and really looking at things and looking behind the reason why you're getting irritated or annoyed or whatever it is, that's big, because when you start to take your own personal responsibility for your behaviour, how you're responding to something, it is transformative. And I've been that soldier myself, so I really do get it. It's interesting when you say that, when you see somebody perhaps behaving a certain way, you now ask yourself, I wonder what's going on with them, or maybe they're going through this, that and the other. And I think when we do start to realise that if we are irritated by someone, which we all are, it's human, we don't love everybody. You know, I'm going to scroll sometimes and find something annoying, not often, but sometimes.
Yeah.
But it's good to say, why? Why am I annoyed by that?
100%.
Is it because of their talent or success, or is it because I don't agree with their point of view? What is it that's irritating? So when you look behind the reason,
yeah,
there's something to be learned that can help you yourself. And I think when people start to look at things that way, it's so beneficial.
Yeah, it is. Like I always say, hurt people hurt.
Yeah, totally.
But then the other scale of things, I myself am that person that's on Instagram. And I was actually thinking about this a few weeks ago. I'm scrolling through Instagram and I'm seeing this ad. Now, I have my own brand, so we use influence marketing and it's huge for our business, like massive.
Sure, yeah,
massive,
yeah, yeah.
Right? So I'm scrolling through Instagram and I'm seeing these influencers all do the same ad and do the same content for the ad. And I'm like, oh my God, flip, 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 flip. And then I'm like, why are you so mad? They're over there just doing their thing. They're not even like, they're just making a few pound, doing their ad, following their brief. Why are you getting so annoyed? Just mute them for a day or two because you actually do like them and get on with your life, Denise. Like, do you know, instead yeah. of being like onto your friend or something, being said like, do you see such and such or, you know, yeah, I think, but we're all human. It's just being aware.
Being aware.
Being aware, like going, oh, like when you, I always say, like when people, I would get a lot of messages saying like my sister's pregnant and I'm on my road, like I've had 6 fails. How did you deal with that? Someone else's happiness is not going to take away or add to your sadness.
Yes.
So by somebody having a happy life or a successful life, it's not going to impact you from having a happy life or a successful life. And when you're doing a fertility journey, that is so important to know. That just because that you don't know if that other person had troubles, you don't know what, they mightn't even want to be pregnant. They mightn't even want to, you know, they might have fallen accidentally. They might be in like a terrible relationship. They might have so much trauma going on. And we just see the outside and we go, oh, like she doesn't deserve this or she doesn't deserve that. Whereas if you stood back and put every single bit of that focus into yourself, into working on yourself, into your little circle, into your family home, into your four walls, it comes back. Mm. It really does. For Lent, I done 40 days of kindness. And I done a chart on Instagram and people were like, how are you doing that? And actually like on day 12, I was like, I'm finding this a bit difficult. Like to think of acts of kindness to do, like bring my neighbour over a cake or, you know, pay for a coffee in a shop. And I was like, day 12, I was like, I'm actually struggling to get, geez, I'm going to have like 18 more days or, whatever, more days through this. How am I going to get through this? And then I wrote a list down about how, like, people done kind things for me. And then I done them. But I was like, imagine we find it more difficult to do kind acts sometimes and it's easier to be mean.
Yeah, yeah.
And mean to ourselves.
Mean to ourselves. Very true.
Yeah, so I do think that when you're on a journey and you're lost after the journey, that's when I think you need to try and work on yourself.
Yeah.
People say to me, I picked up that book and I couldn't read it. And I say, I picked up that book. I picked up that book when Bette was one and I couldn't read it because I wasn't ready.
That's right.
I wasn't ready. Like,
yeah.
The book is amazing. The podcast is amazing.
Yeah.
But I wasn't ready for what it had to teach me.
I'm a massive believer in that. There's a book that I love now and it's one of my favourite books, but I was gifted it in my 20s and it's Deepak Chopra's 7 Spiritual Laws of Success. But I remember picking it up when she gave it to me, this gorgeous woman in Galway. And she went, I want you to have this book. I just feel like, you know, it's going to mean something to you. And I felt really guilty because I went, I don't get this. And I tried and I kept, you know, putting it aside, bringing it up again, reading it. And of course, years later, I went through cancer. I'd studied yoga and I studied lots of different forms of yoga, but one of them was Deepak's. And obviously the book was one of the fundamental books you had to read as part of your teacher training program. And it was like the penny dropped. She was right. I just didn't know it at the time that I did need this book and it would become a really important book in my life, and it is. Like, it's really made sense to me in the past 10 years. But I didn't get it.
Was that the book that changed, like, you know, people say, I became aware or I awakened. Was that your book that...
Definitely. It just felt like doors were being opened in my mind. And and it landed with me. As you said, I didn't get it because I wasn't available for it at that time in my life. Yeah. I wasn't ready for it. But then life happened and, you know, the passage of time. And then I was like, oh, I'm ready for this now.
Yeah. I think yoga is really... I started yoga as well. And I would have been the type of person that, you know, when people have been meditating, I used to watch people say, if you haven't got time for meditation, then you definitely need to do it. I'd be like, oh, here we go again. Like, if I hear one more person saying that. But I started doing yoga 2 minutes a day, building up to 3 minutes, so on, me and my daughter. And it was, the book for me was The Mind, the Mind of the Code of Extraordinary Minds.
Oh yeah,
great. That was my book, right? Yeah. And I remember him saying, this is how I started yoga. I remember him saying, meditation is not turning off your brain. If you turn off your brain, you're dead, like you're gone, right?
Exactly.
What it is being able to focus on something. And when these thoughts come into your head, like dishwasher needs to be unloaded or the washing needs to be done, you're able to refocus your mind.
Exactly, yeah.
So for me, meditating is, you know, when I do my yoga, to be focusing on what I'm doing, my breathing with my daughter, spending that time. And then when my mind trails, being able to bring it back. And that's came into my life when negative thoughts came in. So when I've thought about, you know, my cancel cycles when COVID hit there in March when I was ready to go for IVF, you focus on them negative thoughts and allow the feelings to come through and then bring your mind back to a positive. Don't overlook your feeling that you're feeling. It's okay to be sad. You're going through a shit show, like.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, yeah. You're going through a traumatic time. Be sad. You've earned that right. It's horrible what you're going through, but don't focus there for too long. Don't stay in that little zone for too long. Refocus, and that's when your gratitude and your compassion and forgiveness and all them steps that you can take by practicing them daily. And you have to practice them daily or weekly, because your mind is a funny little devil. And he can take over at any time. And I always say, even to my husband, your mind believes what you tell it.
Yes.
So if you're telling your mind that you're going to become pregnant, someday you will. Or if you're going to tell your mind, I'm going to be a mom someday, you will. Whereas if you're telling your mind, oh, another fail, oh, another, you know, that's all the mind hears. And it just starts believing it. And you start believing it. I think it's really important to speak to yourself the way you would want to speak to your children or to your best friend.
Yeah. So now at 36, how would you say you're different to your 26-year-old self?
The partying probably is one. I would say I learned to forgive. I learned to forgive myself for my past. I learned to forgive others for maybe the hurt that they've caused me in, you know, or whatever situations. I'd say the forgiveness one at 26, if somebody said something or done something, I'd hold on to it for 10 years, like, or 5 years. I'd be angry about it. I'm not talking to her. She done that on me when I was 15. Or, you know, can't believe, like, 3 years later, you'd be saying to your siblings, I can't believe you done that when I was 12. And, like, stop. Like, that's the past. That person isn't the past. You know, you are what you are today, and every day is new. Like, I am not, if I do something wrong, which I'm going to, I'm human. If you don't think that I'm going to do something wrong, then you're going to be set up for a fall. Because, by God, am I going to do so many things wrong in my life that I'm going to shock you to death. So don't put me on a pedestal and think that I'm a superwoman. And don't put me on a pedestal and think that I'm not going to say something that you mightn't agree with. But tomorrow's a new day. And when I wake up tomorrow, that's a fresh start for me. That's a fresh start for me to believe things that maybe I didn't believe in yesterday. Or, you know, it's so important to realise that just because 5 years ago you were this mean person, or you might have bullied somebody in school, or, like, I don't know, you know, what situation you're in, you don't have to be that person today.
Yeah.
You can, you know, change yourself, like. And I feel that if you dig hard enough, you will find a path for everybody. So when I, like, if I hear somebody saying, oh, she done that, I'm like, oh, here, her granny probably did as well. Like,
yeah,
you know, if you dig hard enough, you will find something bad about everybody. So what's important is that you focus on that person, on the people around you today and you yourself today. So if you've had numerous fails of IVF, you're not that fail. This is a new start, a new day, a new story, a new journey. You can reassess it. You can take a different option. You're not your failures.
God, that's brilliant, Denise. You're not your failed. Yeah, that's so... I think that's a huge one. You have... I mean, I was looking forward to chatting to you, but you really are blowing me away. You're so wise and you get it. You get it. But that is a big one, isn't it? You're not your failed. You're not your failures. Because so often we're damaged by pain, painful experiences and struggle, that we worry or we're paranoid, and fear then takes over from feeling that sense of belief or faith that it'll work out this time, that you get so scared.
Yeah, someone said to me the other day, Denise, are you not scared? And I said, no, because I'm after being gifted with a pregnancy.
Yeah.
So if tomorrow something happens, if I go to my scan and they tell me that, you know, this baby isn't meant to be, or, you know, I'm, you know, there's something wrong there, that's the way my journey's going to be. That's a part of it.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
I'm also going to process that part of my journey. And I know that's a bit, but like, you've got to remember that I'm after getting pregnant naturally. So in my thoughts, if this baby wasn't meant to be, I would think, well, I'm after getting pregnant naturally once. I can do it again.
Mm.
Do you know? So... yeah, I think that we are very traumatised. And I think still, if I wake up tomorrow and have a day of fear, that's okay as well. I don't just get rid of my trauma. But what I do is I have my day, I have my feelings, I write them out, I journal them. I make sure that I'm so aware of how I'm feeling. I tell the people, I communicate with my husband. I tell him how I'm feeling. I say, I'm having a really bad day today. You know, I feel like, what happens if this is going to happen? And what, you know, especially when you're going through IVF, every hurdle, like you get to your egg stage and you get 40 eggs and then they have to fertilize with your partner's sperm.
Yeah.
And then the embryos have to last to day 3 or day 5, right? So then I remember on the TV show, they're like, why aren't you getting excited? I was like, no, we need to get to embryos. We need to get to blast 3 or day 5, because day 5 embryo is almost, it's there's a million more cells than day 3. And again, day 3 is a million more cells than just a fresh, right? So every part is an obstacle. And you have done all the criteria. You've taken your drugs, you've had no life, you've paid the money, and you could fall at any hurdle. So it's quite stressful. You're waiting on a phone call, then you have 2 weeks to wait. Yeah.
At this point, I just want to kind of recap, because I do want to talk about the fact that you did Baby Makers. It was a documentary on TV. It was absolutely brilliant. I remember being glued to it myself, and I was just in awe of all of the couples and people who took part and were so real. And I think helped a lot of people who watched. But So anyway, you were told in your late 20s, you're infertile. So really, we're going to have to start upping the treatment here. You did IUI. That didn't work. Then you decided to do IVF. So for people listening, we won't get into the nitty gritty, but essentially my understanding is, if I was to use one word to describe both, I would say IUI is internal and IVF is external.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's still, it's not like IUI is an easier process than IVF necessarily. It's different, but it's still going to take its toll on you too. So you had that to contend with. So you'd done your Clomid, you had tried everything else. How many IUIs did you try?
Oh, I think it was three before they move you to IVF.
Okay.
Three fails.
Right.
So IUI is basically the same sort of drugs, and then you get a trigger injection to release your eggs, and then you have sex with your partner or insert the sperm.
Yeah.
Inside of it. So that's failed.
Okay.
And then you move on to your IVF if the IUI doesn't work, or they could put you straight on the IVF depending on. What, I was young, I was only 26 or 27,
Okay.
So they tried that first. Then IVF, I had a bad track record as well, like 40 eggs, 6 would fertilise. With Beth cycle, 1 survived, it was her. I overstimulated.
Only 1 survived?
Yeah.
That's amazing.
The most I ever got was 2. Mm-hmm. And that was on my last cycle.
Okay.
And because I was on so much drugs, my ovaries overstimulated. So it wasn't safe for them to do a fresh transfer, which happens a lot of the time with women.
Right, yeah.
So now the embryo is in the freezer. Then they get my womb ready. That embryo has to defrost correctly before it can be implanted. So you also have that stress. Because it has to look like a fresh embryo before they'll implant it, basically. And they don't want to implant unless they think there's a high success of, you know, chance of success.
And there's a grading system, isn't there, with embryos?
Yeah. Beth was an A. I used to say, well, she's either the runt of the litter or the cream of the crop, because she was the only one left.
Yeah.
So she's one or the other.
Yeah, she certainly was the cream of the crop. Yeah. And actually, I do want to talk about Beth. We'll get to her a little bit later. But So thankfully it worked, but that you had already gone through 8 rounds at the stage that hadn't.
Yeah.
So on the 9th attempt, you have your little baby girl.
Yeah.
You find out you're pregnant when you're 30.
I found out on my 30th birthday. Yeah, 21st of June. And I always said I wanted to be pregnant before I was 30. Like, I have that in. I've journaled all
my
life.
You're a powerful manifester.
Yeah. Yeah. And I knew I was pregnant. Well, you know, I hoped. And I was at my 30th birthday. And we went home that night. And it, like, 12:30 or 1 o'clock in the morning, or whatever, I'd done the test. And sure, there was, like, Mark was just ecstatic and yeah.
And then you decided to go again and do another round of IVF when she was
18 months.
Yeah. And that's when you also had a film crew following you for the for the documentary Baby Makers. So I can only begin to imagine, because I did a documentary recently myself over the past year on the topic of miscarriage. So I get how difficult it is to be that vulnerable and that real on camera. It's not easy. It's not easy.
They were amazing.
Great.
It was it was a crew of mainly women, but
Do you know what? For those listening, it's the same production company that made the miscarriage documentary that made Baby Makers, and they're a good bunch.
Special people.
Yeah, really good. So you felt safe?
Yeah, and I was very vulnerable, and I'd done everything on camera. So I never got any results. Like, I'd done my test live on television with them.
Yeah.
I'd done everything with them. So I wanted to show, because I feel that, you know, when you're going through an emotion, and right then, when that emotion is happening, that's when it's most relevant. An hour later or 2 hours later is never going to show your vulnerability. It's never going to show how much pain you're in, or how much, because you've processed it a little bit more.
Yeah.
So I felt that if I was doing this, I wanted to bring awareness, because you've got to remember, your whole family are fertility survivors here. It's not just you. So I wanted to show families what a family goes through when a woman is doing her fertility treatment. How much it affects everybody. They were in my job. They were daily with me. They were travelled in the car on the way to appointments with me. They seen me give out to Mark. They used to think he was a saint. He probably is. They were there. They were in my home. And to be honest, it was, I feel really grateful that they were a part of that. I know I had a fail, but I feel very grateful that I had these women around me at that time. I wouldn't change it for the world. Like,
that's great. But in saying that, it was still a really difficult thing to go through, in the sense that watching it back on TV, I would imagine, was a tough watch.
So I'd run around straight after that. Now, they didn't televise that because, and I was kind of glad in a way, because it was another, like, it was one day before transfer and I was just so sick.
Okay.
And I was glad they didn't, because I did feel I let the fertility clinic down. Because,
oh God, not at all. Did you feel that you did?
I did, because my story with Beth was a success.
Yeah.
And it gave people hope. And then I went on. Now, it was so funny, because when they done a transfer, like, they filmed the whole thing. The film crew were in my transfer. Legs up in the air. But I remember the doctor saying, Denise, I'm delighted, because it was a perfect implantation. So when doctors are looking at this documentary, like, my implantation was just spot on. And I was so happy for her, like, you know?
Yeah.
And I can pinpoint the exact time of the Blessington Lakes on, like, day about 13, when I said to Mark, this pregnancy didn't hold. I can actually pinpoint it. I could feel it in my body. I knew I was pregnant. Because when that embryo is implanted into your line, your womb, you are pregnant.
Yeah.
1,000,000%. Now it's just up to the body to hold onto it, or your mind and your belief. So this is the most, the lead up to these 2 weeks for implantation, people are like, what would you recommend? I'm like, podcasts. What I'd recommend is to work on your mind. Eat whatever you need to eat. Don't be so stressing about food. Don't be stressing about exercise. Work on your mind. Yeah. Work on your mindset. Hold your husband's hand. Feel your belly. Believe in yourself. Believe in your doctors. Believe in the drugs. Visualize the baby. Like, go on Pinterest. Pick out all of your baby's clothes. That sort of stuff. Do that thing for yourself. Because that's where your belief comes from. Everything else, like, you know yourself, like, what, you know, by eating a certain food, it's not going to change the fact that this baby is meant for your family or not.
Yeah.
You know?
It's such a huge step, isn't it? Your mindset and stress and fear and all of those things and what part they play. So if you allow yourself to feel stressed and paranoid and worried and this is not going to work, unfortunately, that will have an impact. But the same goes for the positive thoughts.
Yeah.
You know, and that's quite a loaded statement, actually. And I'm sure there are probably people listening who might be thinking, you know, oh, well, that's not true. I was so positive and it didn't maybe work out. So I understand that that's quite a,
yeah, but that was me,
a loaded, like, statement as well. Yeah.
I think the fear will always be there. And again, it's like just trying to bring your mind back.
Yeah.
I'm not saying that, you know, I was positive before I had Beth. And I believed every single time, like I said to you, I believed this is my time now. This is definitely it. This is definitely it. And it wasn't to be. And I'm not saying that was because my mind, obviously, just that the timing was wrong for whatever reason, or, like, I have great faith. I know there's not everybody. And I don't like talking about faith, because people are so mixed opinions on faith. My faith, I am Catholic, but I believe that you can have a faith, like a blessing. It doesn't have to be God, or it doesn't have to be a religion.
Yeah.
It's a faith. Yes. It could be your faith could be your circle, your parents, your partner. You know, it could be nature. Whatever your faith is, I do believe it's really important to have a faith.
Yeah.
Somebody to surround yourself in. Someone that you can kind of nearly manifest your journey to. Could be a yoga teacher, it could be anybody, it could be a mentor, but I do believe your blessings and your faith are quite important to have, no matter what it is.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. So you said there you were at Blessington Lakes.
Yeah, I went there for a walk with Mark and Beth, and I said, I'm gonna sit in the back of the car on the way home. And he was like, why? I was like, I actually feel really uncomfortable. And I just started crying in the back of the car. I was holding Beth's hand, and I said, Mark's looking in the, you know, the wind mirror. And I said, baby's gone, like. And he was like, what? And I was like, I'm not pregnant. And he was like, but like 5 hours ago you were like, and I was like, yeah, I was, and I'm not now. I could actually feel the baby leaving me. Like, I was like, I could feel the switch in my mind. I could feel the switch in my body. I started getting discharged about an hour later. I was like, that's it now. And he's like, do you want to do a test? And I was like, no, I think the film crew were coming on the Tuesday or something. I said, no, I'll wait till Tuesday. And he said, are you sure? Like, we could do it together. And I said, no, I want to show, you know, because obviously you still have that little glimmer, like, you know, because at such an early stage, you're 4 weeks pregnant, even though you've only been implanted 2 weeks. Even at such an early stage, you know, you still have hope and, like, you know, a flicker of light that, you know, that's not the case. That's, you know, and it can be. I've heard of loads of stories where people have bled and still got, you know, still had a successful pregnancy or, you know, this has happened to them, but then the baby went on to thrive. So I suppose that day or two is kind of next, well, processing it, like, you know. Yeah. And then when the film crew came, we'd done the test and, yeah, I was like, in my head, I was like, the people that are out there now watching this are going to be so deflated. I felt like I wasn't giving them hope. But in hindsight, when I look back, I was shown the reality.
Absolutely. I was just about to say.
Yeah.
Like, and were you putting that pressure on yourself?
No, not at all. I had Beth, so it was a lot easier for me to show that side of me.
Uh-huh.
Because I had my dream. I was a mom.
Yeah, yeah.
So it wasn't like I was still searching fully, like, although I was still chasing, let me tell you, and I'll touch on that in a second, but, like, I was still chasing stuff that I didn't have at this stage, like wanting the second child. It's like, I was moving house before COVID, like this, like, to, like, a huge house. For what, like, Denise? For who? For you. You're actually really happy in your home, like, you know? So I was still chasing at this stage. Beth was 18 months. I was still chasing the next child. I was still chasing, you know, that something, like, instead of just being content.
Yeah.
So instead of, I don't feel like there was any pressure on me because I had Beth. So the pressure was a little bit off me because no one's going to ask you when you're having kids or, you know, how's it going? And people's sympathy isn't the same for you when you have a child. So it's good, like, as in, you know, when you're trying to have a child and you're failing, people's sympathy is going to be absolutely huge. Like, they're going to be like, you know, I'm so sorry, like, and stuff. But when you have that one child, it's, even though it is as hurtful for the person from the outside world, you know, you have a child, you're lucky kind of thing. So, yeah, I was still at that time searching for this extra bit, extra, like, you know, it's only in the last, like I said, 2 years that I'm, like, so content with everything I have around me.
Mm.
I feel like if my home was gone in the morning, I wouldn't care. Like, materials, like, someone said to me through COVID, what about your salon? I said, what about it? Like, you know, it's a job. It's not my life. I can pick things up somewhere else, do you know?
Yeah.
So
yeah, but you have your priorities in the place they are truly meant to be, which is great. And I do think a lot of people have had those wake up calls this year that they've reassessed what's important and realised what's important. And sometimes what's important to us is right in front of our eyes. We don't see it. So that was then, and you still have one little
frozen embryo.
I heard you speak about the fact that you were even considering adoption, and then there was obviously another IVF round that you were considering doing, and then COVID hit. So there's a lot that still happened before you found out that you're now pregnant.
Yeah. So I was booked for January 2019. Work commitments came up. I have a salon in Dublin and I decided, you know what, I'm going to give the Dublin salon 8 to 12 weeks. It needs me. It was only brand new. So I put my head down and focused on that. And it was a hard 8 weeks in the salon, but it was just they're just an amazing bunch of girls. But anyway, so March hit and I had my protocol and the Sims emailed it over. And on whatever day it was, they rang me and said, Denise, we think we have to close our clinic, but we're going to do everything online. So Dr. Luda's going to have a Zoom or a WhatsApp or whatever with you. This is literally COVID just hit.
Yeah.
Oh, it's all right. Okay. Just didn't think anything of it. So Luda called me and she said, it was 3 days later or something. She said, they're actually taking steroids off the market. They're not allowing us to administrate them. And you need steroids for your cycle or, you know. So, and I said, oh, really? She said, yeah, we'll just hold out. At this stage, they didn't know whether they're going to be opened, closed.
Yeah.
They didn't know if they were allowed to see patients. People's cycle that were mid-cycle were cancelled in clinics.
God,
and it was
awful, yeah.
It was an awful time. I mean, I will never forget the messages from women during that time in that March. I couldn't even begin to imagine. Now, I think anyone that had a transfer booked was okay, but anyone that had collection was, you know,
yeah.
A lot of the clinics. Anyway, so that was March. That was grand. And we went into lockdown and I was probably pretty content with that. And I can't remember what month I was starting back. I can't remember if it was June, July. It was the summertime. And I was out cycling. I was listening to a podcast. And I fell off my bike and fractured a bone in my arm. Went okay. Straight to Nace. Was due to start my cycle 10 days later. I'll never forget it. So everyone knew that I was going to start my cycle. So I'm in Nace Hospital and they say to me, you're going to need physio on that for the next 4 to 6 weeks. And if it doesn't heal itself, we're going to have to operate. So unfortunately, you can't go ahead with your cycle until 4 weeks until we see if it's healed or not.
Oh God, okay.
So when I think about it now, it was just like the universe.
Yeah,
so
I said, that's what I'm thinking.
Yeah. So I said, right, okay. So I was doing my physio through Nace on the computer. And I remember at one stage, it's the weirdest thing ever. I remember the one stage when I went in to get my x-ray done, I was bawling. The tears were literally dripping from onto the ground. I couldn't even lift my arm up. Mm. And I remember during one of the physio sessions, the nurse saying to me, our main thing is that you'll be able to eat, put your hand up to your mouth, right? And I said, really? And she said, a lot of people with that fracture never actually fully, regain it. But once you get that movement, you won't have to have surgery. And I said, all right, great. And within week four, my arm was perfect. It was nothing ever happened to my arm. It was nothing happened to my arm.
Yeah.
And they said, no, you don't need an operation. And it was them kind of 4 to 6 weeks that I really was after been working. It was just me and Beth on our own. I was really after been working on myself. And we were due to go back to the salon then. And I said to Mark, it was August. And I said, Mark, I don't think I want to do IVF. And he said, what? And I said, I'm actually sick of chasing this second baby. I'm sick of it. It's actually draining the life out of me. And I'm quite content with Beth.
Mm-hmm.
And he was like, no problem, whatever you want to do. Obviously, I'd love another child. Obviously, I would. But totally respect, you're the one that has to go through it. I said, look, we'll have Christmas. We'll enjoy this. I'm back in the salon now. They're back opened and it's going to be absolutely manic. I'm going to throw myself into that. My voodoo brand was soaring, literally just skyrocketing at this stage. It was actually, no one ever thought it was going to do what it done. Well, I did, but I was like, I'm going to take a break. So obviously then I got rid of every single baby stuff in January. The last of the baby stuff in January, because I was so content. I was like, I'm not putting myself in my marriage, because we nearly did. There was times we nearly did break up, And I was like, why would I go and put my 6-year-old through this now? Why would I go and put my mum and dad through my erratic mood swings and hormonal changes, as well as my team? Because although they're very understanding and stuff like that, they still have to listen to me if I'm, hormonal or whatever, taking drugs and stuff. And they've been with me since the start. So them girls were with me since, Beth and, all the way through. So I was like, I'm not doing it anymore. I'm so happy, Sheila. I can't even tell you. I'd sit there and be like, this is my perfect day. I have my perfect life. I have the life that I want.
Yeah.
And then obviously God decided to give me really what I wanted, you know, like, you know, deep down or, you know.
So I mentioned that book earlier, right?
Yeah.
The Seven Spiritual Laws of Success. And one of the laws in it that I speak about whenever I, you know, not always, but when I give wellness talks, I often come back to this one law out of the seven. That for me was a huge, like, whoa, I now get this. This is massive. And it's called the law of detachment. And the word detach sounds cold and strange. But when you really delve into what it's about letting go, surrendering to whatever is going to be. And there's a classic line in it where it says there's magic in the uncertainty. So when you let go of that need and want, desire to have something be a certain way, which you obviously did because you completely let go of that. You went, wait a second, I'm happy now. When you start to let go and surrender to the now and being content in the now, you allow so much to enter into your life, which is what happened to
Absolutely.
You.
Absolutely.
So fast forward to, is it October? Out of the blue.
I stayed with my mum and dad because I was having a bit of a stressful time. I went, obviously go to your mum and dad all the time when, you know, packed up Beth and I went out and I stayed with them. And my dad said to me, do you have a period? And I said, no. And he said, well, look, there's blood on the bed in there. My dad went in to make my bed. And I said, Dad, I haven't had a period in 10 years. Definitely didn't have a period. And my mum said, well, it's not me because I'm through the menopause.
My
mother's like a complete lady. And she's like, well, it's not me, you know. And she thought it was so funny, like, you know. And I have amazing parents, like amazing parents. But I said, definitely wasn't me. And then later that day, I was going to the toilet and there was blood like in my knickers. And I was like I don't, my mom, there wasn't even any pads in my house. I think my mom found one from like 1960 or something. Like, and I was like, oh my God. So I actually thought it was just a bleed from stress. So it was very light and it probably lasted 3 days. Yeah. And Mark actually tells me now that I said to him, I bet you I'll get pregnant. Like, I said, did I? And he goes, yeah, you did. You're like, oh, Mark, I went home, like, you know, 3 days later or something. I said, would you believe? Because he, obviously he's never seen me have a period.
Yeah.
So I was like, would you believe I had a period? And he was like, what? And he was like to me, yeah. I was like, he's like, I've never seen you have a period. And I was like, yeah, I did. So I told Dr. Luda. I told two of my really good friends, one that's had a miracle story, and another one of my really close friends said, I actually had a period the other day. And they were like, all right. Anyway, October came and Luda said to me, well, and I said, no, nothing. She said, just look at, let's see what happens in, you know, or sorry, November. Let's see what happens in November. And nothing came in November. I chat to Luda all the time, like regardless of me doing IVF or not. Mm. Obviously she gave me my daughter, so I just think she's the most amazing human being that'll ever walk on this planet. So I said to her in December, no sign. That was it. Look, I never even gave it a second thought. Like I just thought that it was stress, it was a light bleed. I was like, it probably wasn't even a period. Like, I, you know, it was just, I didn't really focus too much on it because it never happened again.
Yeah.
So I just went back to my normal, like, not having a period. I actually used to think, am I so lucky I don't get a period? Like, you know?
Yeah, well, that is another way of looking at it too. Right, so fast forward a few months and you think, you know, you're training, you're watching your food, you're really into health and well-being, and you think you're putting on a few pounds.
Oh, Sheila, my friends are in stitches, right? So I got food. I always get food. I don't cook. I'm a really bad cook.
Right.
And I changed, you know, you'd be watching Instagram, watching influencers. So I changed the company that I was getting the food off.
Right.
And a few of my friends that are influencers were getting the same company. And they have screenshotted messages from me. I actually must put them up on my Instagram. there's too much pasta in that. My stomach's so bloated. Okay. Literally, because I don't normally eat pasta. And some of the dishes have pasta and rice in them, right? And I'm like, lads, them dishes are full of pasta. No, like, when I think back to it, right? So I'm like, I had signed up for 4 weeks. And I have I texted the company saying, I won't be going ahead with the food anymore. And he's like, any issues? I was like, no. Literally, on my walk, me and Sarah go for a walk. I was like, look at my belly. That just goes to show you what pasta does to your belly, right? Also, my friend Zara
The poor company, were they?
No, they didn't. I'm sure they just thought I was just signed up. Zara, my friend, I went out for one walk with her through the whole of COVID and she took a video of us. And I said, do not post that. I have a belly in that. And she was laughing away. And I said, like, I actually have a flabby belly. And like I said, I never held my weight there.
Yeah.
It was always my bum or my legs. My belly was always flat. If I was a size 14 or I was a size 10, flat belly. It was my shape. And I was like, this is so weird. So I went to acupuncture when I was 25 weeks. Now I know I was 25 weeks. And I was telling her my whole story. I was a new acupuncturist. She's actually above my doctor's, telling her a whole story. And we went through everything. And she treated me. And like my bump was very small. Like when I think back, because anyway,
yeah.
The next, she gave me herbs. I took the herbs. She'd take one a day, and if you don't, I couldn't go to the toilet. Like that's, and I hadn't been to the toilet in about a month.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, right. So I hadn't been to the toilet in a month.
So you were thinking it was digestive.
Yes.
All right.
Hadn't been to the toilet in a month, and I always had. I wouldn't be a regular like pooer.
Yeah.
So then I went to my GP.
Yeah.
The next week after the herbs didn't make me go to the toilet. And obviously she knows my history.
Yeah.
I mean, like they obviously, that was the doctors that I went to when they'd sent me. It's actually right beside the Wellmans Clinic in Newbridge. Like, so it's all relevant. Like, and she examined me, like she examined my belly. And I don't want to, like, she, like, obviously she's very upset with herself that she didn't do a test, but I mean, I was infertile. I didn't have a period in years. And when she said to me, we said something, and I said, she said, when was your last period? And I said, I didn't really have one. I think I bled in like October for a day or two. And she was like, all right, okay. So I sat up in the bed. She examined my stomach and was like, oh my god, there's so much wind inside of you. She turned me around and examined my bum.
Right, yeah.
Put a light up me and her finger up my bum to make sure there was no liaisons in my bum that was stopping me going to the toilet. Now, this is only like a week before I found out I was pregnant.
Yeah.
And wow, right. Gave me a clean prep because I had tried Andrew's. It didn't make me go to the toilet. So this was my last resort, to go to a GP to try and get me to go to the toilet in my head, like.
Yeah.
And she gave me a clean prep that you have before the cameras. And she gave me a follow-up of Movicol for the next few days after the clean prep because I was quite bloated at this stage. And like, obviously she knew my stomach and she was like, Jesus Christ. So I went home and done the clean prep and I barely pooed. I was like to my man, Dad, like, I barely pooed. Like, I remember getting that camera 10 years ago and I remember pooing, like, like properly been beside the toilet. I went over to my mum's with Beck because Mark was working in case I needed to poo too much and I wouldn't be able to look after Beth.
Yeah.
Do you get me? I was for all this pooing. I was like, I'm going to clear my bowels. And my stomach didn't go down.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't take the Movicol.
Right.
So I said, I'll wait a day or two now. I was like, because I was waiting for the call from Clain for the camera, which I got the next day. And they said to me, look, I was going private. We can get you in with the doctor next Thursday. I said, brilliant. I said, I'm not even going to take that Mav call because if the clean prep didn't make me go to the toilet, this is hardly going to make me go to the toilet. I said to my mum, I think I have bowel cancer or something. Like, there's definitely something wrong with me.
Oh, Jesus, you were worried, like?
Yeah, I wasn't worried, but I was like,
there's something going on.
I want to go to the toilet.
What's going on, yeah.
And then I was doing yoga. And I was lying on my back and my belly button popped and I got an arm or something and I was like, there's actually a human being inside of me. It was the most surreal thing.
Wow.
I was like, I didn't even believe it. I was like, what?
Yeah.
How? When? Who? And then that was the Saturday and the Sunday I'd done a test and it was one of the clear blue ones, and I got two in a pack, and the first one didn't register. And I was like, that was a waste of 16 euros. That was a total waste of 16 euros. Like, the two boxes were blank. I was like, grand. And then I said, look, I'll do the second one. And within 30 seconds, there was two blue lines. And I just, like, I knew anyway, but I didn't. Yeah. Like, I still felt like, oh, but I didn't have a period. And I didn't have IVF. And, you know, if I'm pregnant, I have to be months and months pregnant.
Yeah.
Because I knew... it was the, I knew the exact date that I had a bleed, and I was like, that means, and even when I rang Luda, she was like, yeah, you're probably 3 months, and I was like, no, Luda, I bled on like the 3rd of October, 2nd of October, and she was like, right, well, come into me. So the Monday I went straight into her, and when I went into the first room, obviously she put the pod thing inside of me,
yeah,
and she's like, wrong room, into the other room. And then we went in for the abdominal, and...
yeah, because that's only, isn't it, up to three months, yeah.
So I didn't really, like, the screen that she had wouldn't really be for a proper, you know, like scan. Well, maybe it was, but maybe I was just in too much shock. I couldn't, like, even process it. She was like, 24, 26 plus weeks. I was like, yeah, and that would make perfect sense. I was like... she just couldn't stop laughing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, how rare is that as well? For, I'm sure that's a first for her in her career.
I definitely think from my stream it is. And I definitely think, obviously, doctors, I'm sure they do believe in miracles, but I'd say they wouldn't believe in them as much as us because they're scientific, you know, like, you know. I used to say to Luda, what will I do? You know, is there any tips? And she's like, take the drugs. Just, you know, take the drugs. Mm. So I think people obviously that are, you know, like she's so well educated. And but I do think, you know, how do they process that?
That's the thing. And like, I remember speaking to Rosanna Davis, and I did a podcast with her, yeah. But she was also in the documentary, and you know, she was obviously well into her pregnancy when we sat down to talk for the documentary. And no more than what you were told, she was told by every doctor she saw that, you know, it's not going to happen for you naturally. It's just not. And yet there she is. And there, she was defying science.
And then with twins. Naturally.
Yeah. So there, she's an example of how you can be told one thing, but something else can happen. And again, you are. And that's why I find that stories like yours, stories like hers, give so much hope, yeah, and belief and inspiration to so many women and couples. And that stuff is really important, that we get those messages out there, that they happen.
It does. And you know what I really want to say? Because this became very relevant to me. Obviously, I remember where I was when Rosanna announced.
Yeah.
And same. It was magical. Like, and I remember... the whole of Ireland been so happy. Such a beautiful girl, beautiful family, dreams coming true. Your heart would fill.
And everyone feels the same for you.
I know.
Do you know?
I remember hearing her news, and me still, a little part of me for that moment said, it still won't be me.
Really?
Like, yeah, because you're...
conditioned?
Not conditioned. Will I be that lucky? Will I be that, you know, I think that I wasn't pregnant when I found out, obviously, her news. When, how old are her twins? No, they must be one now, are they?
No, they're not. They're only, was it November they were born?
Oh my God, yeah.
I think so.
But I think that you just, it's like anybody's journey. You know, if you see somebody that's had, like, got their break or got their, you know, you think, oh, isn't that amazing? You know, but a little tiny pang goes, although I hope it's me, it probably won't be. Do you know, like, as a human being, you kind of do think that if you see someone that's in stardom or someone that's after getting the job promotion, you know, beside you, or someone in school, say when, you know, when you're in school and someone gets the prefab, or, you know, and you think, oh God,
yeah,
I'm delighted for them and I hope that'll be me someday. But inside, you kind of doubt yourself, like, oh, you probably won't be that lucky or something. And I remember thinking, you know, now I really wanted to get the point across that you are special, you are amazing, and it can be you.
Yes, yeah.
It really can, like.
Mm-hmm.
It like 1,000,000% can be you.
To someone listening who needs to hear those words, that's going to be like,
yeah,
a bam around their heart. Who perhaps is struggling and suffering and feeling so down and so deflated. Hearing that from you after all you've been through, it can be you.
Yeah,
that's so powerful.
But it can.
Yeah,
and you can do anything. Anything, like,
yeah.
Imagine that you can do absolutely anything. You don't need, you need determination and belief and, yeah, hard work along the way, whether that's, you know, hard working in your job or hard work on yourself. It doesn't come easy, but it can be done. Mm. And I do think that if you are down and you're in that place that you just can't get out of, just don't stay there for too long. Just don't stay there for too long. Reach out. Every single person around you idolizes you, loves you, will help you. Mm-hmm. Like, if you reach out, because you can't accept help unless you ask for it. So if you're like rock bottom, whatever your journey is, even if it's not fertility, if you're rock bottom and you think there's no light, I can't get out of it, I'm such a failure, I keep on failing. I see it all the time, even with women, just even on diets, like they just feel like such failures. Oh, I can't start again because I failed. And like I said, tomorrow you're not the person that you were when you were failing. You're that new person and you can do it.
Yeah.
And you might fail again and you might fall again, but you can also get back up again.
Mm-hmm.
And you can also get back on track again. It's just important not to stay down there, whatever your journey is, for too long. Do you know, have a point where you can say, hiya sister, hiya friend, I need you to come around and help me.
Yeah.
You know.
This has been an amazing conversation. I have no idea how long we've been talking. We could be talking for 10 minutes or 5 hours. I have no idea. But I know this is going to help so many people who listen.
So.
Yeah, it will. It will. And what you're doing and what you're doing with your Instagram page is you're using your platform in the very best way that anyone can use it, because you're being real, but you're inspiring as you go. And, you know, I think everybody's behind you, you know, for the next, how many weeks are left now? 11 weeks left. Until your baby is in your arms, we'll all be with you and shouting from the sidelines. But look, one person I haven't spoken about, really, we haven't spoken about yet, and we have to talk about her, is your gorgeous little girl, Beth, who's 6. Who's your precious little person. And I can only begin to imagine the excitement that she feels knowing that she's going to be a big sister.
Yeah. It was so funny because I really want to touch on this, because the last 3 months I spent telling her she definitely manifested this baby, because for 4 months solid she was like, please mom. And I kept on saying to her, you know, if God is lucky enough, if we're lucky enough to, you know, we can't just demand a brother or sister, we have to be given it, we have to be lucky enough, so we have to be really grateful for this beautiful home that we have and, you know, all the nice things that you have, and if we're lucky enough we might have one. So that was for about 4 months. So that really comes in with the timing, because the last 3 months I've spent telling her, it's just me and you, buddy. Me and you. Isn't this just great? Isn't this house just brilliant? We get a dog and it's just me and you and daddy and all this kind of jazz. And then I was like, she was really accepting of it. She was like, okay, yeah, that's fine. And then I said, you know, we're going to have a baby. And she was like, but what about the dog? I was like, that is totally my fault. Like, literally, like 100%. Like, now she is the most kindest 6-year-old. If you met her, anyone that meets her, she's very special. She's the best version of me and my husband could, you know, she got the best parts. It was like all children. They're so beautiful. Their minds are just so innocent and just beautiful.
Yeah.
And she's every bit of that. But yeah, she's so excited now. And she's kind of asking, you know, questions like, you know, did I do that when I was in your belly? And it's, there's 6 years between me and my sister, and we're best friends.
Oh, brilliant.
And I'm like, there's going to be 6 years, you know, between Beth and her sibling. And I'm like, I can't wait for her to grow in a home with another sibling. I think, regardless of if it's the mother and father, growing up in a home, being brought up by the same two people is very special.
Yeah.
You know, you've the same two people rearing you. That connection is so deep. It's I don't even mean, I don't even care if they're biologically not your children, or if they're biologically not siblings, but if they grow up in the same home with the same rules, wrecking each other's heads, and, you know, just by the same parents, I think that is so special.
Yeah.
Like, to have that in your life is more than the law. And Mark has a child, so he has a stepdaughter. I have a stepdaughter, but it's different when it's in the home. And I'm not saying that anybody that's an only child either has any less
sure
of a connection.
Yeah.
But I know how special my siblings are to me. And they're the people that you could ring with no judgment. Mm. They nearly kind of have to accept you even when they don't want to. Because your mom and dad would kill them, like, you know. But I think then, obviously then, as parents, when you're gone, to know that your children have each other. Mm. If you're lucky, you know, if life works out great. I mean, I'm not saying Beth would be any less loved or a person if she had been on her own. But it's just something that fills my heart, because I was reared in a very happy, loving home with my siblings. So to be able to give that to my child, I feel very lucky.
Yeah.
Do you know?
And you had your number.
I know.
You had your number.
It's
amazing.
Yeah.
So come here, the next 11 weeks are going to be busy. You're going to have to, what's on the list? What do you need to get?
Do you know what? I have a mobile home in Wexford. And I said to Mark, do you know what I'm going to get now? I'm going to buy one of them little, I saw them in Aldi, and they just fit the side of the bed, because obviously the mobile home's small. And I'm going to get a disposable bath, and I'm going to have a baby bag, and I'm going to bring my family down to my mobile home for the month of August, because obviously Beth will be off school.
Brilliant idea.
And I'm going to need nothing. I'm going to, like, you get sucked in so fast to all of these contraptions, and all that baby needs is you.
Yeah.
So that's literally what I'm going to do. And then I'll assess and get the house ready for a, you know, I'll obviously paint the nursery and buy nice things, but I intend to go down to Kirklow, if the restrictions are lifted, please God, by August. Beth will be on holidays, and just have a month with my family.
That sounds blissful.
Like how?
Yeah, that's what a perfect plan.
I know.
Perfect plan. Huh. And you think about when we were reared, like, by our parents, what they had, which was feck all.
Absolutely.
We turned out okay.
Absolutely.
Relatively speaking.
It's debatable.
So you're right. Like, what do you need in the beginning?
Yeah.
Yeah. There's certain things that are probably crucial, but a lot of the other stuff, you've done it before as well, so you'll know what worked and what you needed and what you didn't need.
We do put pressure on ourselves, because I was like, oh my God, I have nothing. Then I said to Mark last night, if I give birth to this baby tonight and got to bring her home to this house, that's enough.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, Denise, I am so filled with love and excitement for you. You're an amazing woman.
Thank you.
And
so much,
I'm so delighted that you took time, because I know it's not easy. You know, you have a lot going on, to take time to sit down and have this conversation that I know is going to help so many people. So you're just brilliant. Best of luck for the coming weeks
and
months.
Thank you very much.
I'm visualizing now you guys down in your mobile home having a gorgeous time. It's going to be absolutely amazing, and thank you so much.
Thank you for having me so much.
If you enjoyed this chat, please show your support by leaving a rating or a little comment on Apple, and by clicking follow on Spotify.
I would be so thankful. You've been listening to Ready to Be Real Conversations.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.